pick up at that point.
Okay, is that finished or?
No,
could sorry.
You continue with just describing? You were saying that...
Yes, I think when the house changed, looking back, that was the start of the big change in the city.
Did the atmosphere of trading on the floor change with the new building, or was it still more or less the same?
It was more or less the same, but it was slightly more clinical. If you understand what I mean by that. It was slightly more clinical. Because when I first went there, as far as jobbers were concerned, you were advertising. You weren't even allowed to put your name up on the pitch where you stood. And of course, nobody had badges. So you had to know everybody who you dealt with and had contact with. And many a time when I was first went in there, my Bailey would deal with the broker and he'd book it and then he went like that.
So he'd point sideways?
He'd point sideways, you know, to follow the chap he dealt with. And I used to have to follow this chap round the stock exchange because it was considered an insult when you dealt with anybody to ask who their firm was because they knew you and you were supposed to know them. So if you didn't know their name, you had to send somebody around like myself, a junior, who follow them, find out who they are. So you'd stop somebody, a shunter or someone who knew, do you know who he is? And then, no, don't know, never seen him before. Then you follow him round and you go into the telephone boxes and you go there and give the number and then you'd ask the telephone, do you know that chap? Oh yes, he's John Pruss. And then you run back, oh, John Pruss, oh, good. But it was considered an insult to ask who you dealt with. So nobody had any badges or that, so you had to run round and find out who he was. If you didn't, you were in trouble. Why didn't you do the job properly?
Are there any things like that of the old stock exchange that you remember that gradually passed away?
Well, there are all sorts of things. I mean, in the old stock exchange, anybody running, caught up, I have you upstairs, they used to say. That meant you'd be, they never did it, but they always threatened to take you upstairs. And you had the members' cloakroom, you know, where they were washing. And if you wanted to get hold of somebody quick, you daren't go in there. You daren't go in there. If you're wearing a blue button, you daren't walk in there. But what you had to wait, you might see some young chap who was a member who knew, ask Bailey over there, he's wanted immediately, I'm waiting here. And they'd do it. All things like that have sort of disappeared.
I want to ask you now some questions, general questions about jobbing. What would you say it took to be a successful jobber?
How long would it take from... I would say if you were bright, a minimum of 4 years.
And what were the qualities that you required?
I would say an agile brain, ability to change. You had to be very, not elastic, but you had to be able to change your mind very, very quickly. I mean, one virtue, I can remember when I was young, and my prime, I suppose, that I used to be able to change a price. Suppose now, by just looking at the man and some sort of instinct, when you thought market wasn't there, but you were going to say 3.6, you'd alter your price to a penny, halfpenny, fourpence, halfpenny, in a split second, with less than a split second. You could only do that with experience, and you had to be observant. I mean, any market's falling, a chap runs over in a hurry, he's usually a seller, and all matter, you know, where is he? All sorts of what I call attention to detail and being quick. You had to be very, very, you didn't have to be an intellectual. You had to have what I call a quick thinking brain, very similar. The only comparison is bookmaker. The jobbing system and bookmaking are very, very similar. There's very little difference. Like you get, like you say, bidding for stock and you're a seller, It's just like a bookmaker making a false favourite and make look as though the money's going on it. It's a false favourite, and people follow the money and back it, and it's a wrong one.
Mm. Just incidentally, were there jobbers interested in horse racing?
Oh, yes. Before the war, they used to have a board up, and the tape used to come through, and there were six bookmakers there, members of the Stock Exchange, all running books on horse racing. And the one of the big talking points when I first arrived in the house was that two members had been expelled, and it was connected with horse racing. And what they and the, of course the waiters used to come along and take their time and put up the results, you know, on the, there was a sort of pin sticking out on a green beige board, and the result of the race. Well, they got them for miles over the other side of the house, and it all was late. And then somebody used to get the result from Ladbrokes, which was just over the road. And one chap was standing by a bookmaker, and they had a signal, whatever it was, 5-3, and they'd back that horse. They put in a few losers, but as they consistently won on balance all the time, the bookmakers around, there were six of them, all sitting around there. They were very carefully watched, and they were found out, and they were both expelled from the Stock Exchange. That was one of the first things I remember discussing. Mm. And then, of course, there was another time when Dick Wilkings, was head of Wed Durlacher, was very friendly with the Queen Mother, and did a lot, you know, over the sticks and that sort of thing, horses. And on one occasion, they brought a donkey into the house. They said that Dick Wilkins got a new jumper and brought this donkey into the house.
You've mentioned some of the qualities that you thought a successful jobber required. Were there unsuccessful jobbers?
Yes, quite a few.
And what would you say were the reasons for that? What made an unsuccessful jobber?
Well, I would say basically in letting the broker make their book. Rather than you, well, a broker will come along and sell them stock. And of course, if the broker sold them stock, they think, oh, I'm a bull of the stock, it must go up. Instead of thinking the reverse, that this chap is rather nosy, I should be short, not a bull. It was being not sharp enough to spot bad bargains. I mean, any fork and deal, it's making a profit that is the clever bit.
Can you think of any particular unsuccessful jobbers, again, without mentioning names?
Well, there was one chap in the Kaffir market. There was a stock called Strathmore. And he was a very smart sort of chap. And, we called him Lord Strathmore. And he used to go in the market, oh, buy this and do that. And I have always made a profit. And in the end, he lost a lot of money and people asked him to leave. You know, he was forcibly ejected, or, you know, the firm said, pack it up. There have been lots of failures. And you've got to have a successful jobber would be, in my opinion, a very successful course bookmaker.
You mentioned brokers there and not allowing the brokers to make your book. How would you have characterised your relations with the brokers as a jobber? Were they amicable?
But the first thing you got, I always say, one of the first things is know your customers. And some people, as a chap now, he's with our firm, he used to be a broker. And he was, and every time I dealt with him, I lost money, so whenever he came to me, I was always very cautious. If he said he wanted to sell 5,000, I'd say 1,000, because I knew it was hot. Oh, don't talk about me, you were no good. I said, yes, but I survived and made money. The people you went and dealt with, they had to pack up. Because in other words, many of the jobbers who were good for the brokers were bad for their firms. A lot of them, very good for the brokers, they could always go and deal with them. But they were bad for their firms because they lost money for their firm.
Would you say jobbing was a risky business?
I would say it's extremely risky.
Can you recall situations where you felt yourself in a vulnerable position as a jobber, other dealing situations?
I had a big switch situation with, I was a Bear of Plessy and a Bull of Australia. They took over a very big electric firm in Australia. And I had a very big switch position. And then, you know what, the Australian market, it was a big complications on the getting the stock out of Australia and all this, that and the other, and the deal might fall through and there's a big loss, but it all came right at the end. That was on one occasion. Another occasion, I had a big book in Ford Motors before they were taken over by the Americans. And something happened in New York and they dropped a pound. And I had a very big position. I said, oh, God knows what's going to happen here. Well, they're worth about £4. There was no deal. Anyhow, that was a false scare for America, and that went. So I was never worried, because I always thought it would go through, because I knew they had a certain percentage and all the rest of it. I said, and the firm got the, with Donison, the firm got the wind up. I said, look, we're not only will you get your money for the takeover, we get another extra half crown for the dividend, and that happened. But that looked a bit shaky at the time. One firm was a big bear, Sidney King, who used to be with Smith Rouse Start on his own. He was a big bear, and I think it nearly broke him.
What would you say were the strengths of the jobbing system?
The strength of the jobbing system was that you could always deal. The system meant that the broker was entire, his views and ideas of dealing were entirely separate from the jobbers. The jobber was completely independent with their own ideas as well, which made a makes a market. And the jobbers also, when there was a market, served a purpose in that they informed people basically what was going on. Well, now all you've got is a price on the screen, nothing else. I mean, you go to the jobber, I mean, you see the prices going up now in the market, or down, and you don't know why. Mm-hmm. But when you go over, supposing like yesterday, the market's down 28 points, I think it was down yesterday. You go to the job and say, well, the market's flat, what's going on? You say, well, look, there's my book, I haven't dealt. Mm-hmm. And I think it was very, very little business yesterday. The market, well, now all you see is a screen. You could always go and find out what was going on in the stock. Mm. Or they'd normally tell you. In other words, they were the market makers were a source of information. Now they're only a source of price.
Moving to one final area of questions. Are there any particular personalities or people that stand out in your memory as a jobber, from your experiences on the floor of the house? Mm. Who were the characters of the stock exchange?
Well, all sorts of characters. There was Blenner Hassett. I remember just when I went in there, a chap named Blenner Hassett, and the yo-yo, those yo-yos started up. It was a new phase. So, the yo-yo in the advert, they said, well, everybody buying these yo-yos, even Mr. Blenner Hassett is using one, which is an unusual name. So he sued them and got, in those days, a lot of money, got £20,000 out of them. Mm. I mean, that was a sort of typical character. There was Max Caro. He was a character. He ran these cadets, and every on the 1st of May, he always used to come in the house wearing a straw hat, and the first man to get hold of him grabbed it and chucked it up in the air, and the straw hat was destroyed. Mm. And they had nicknames. I mean, it was one terribly ugly man, Shaw of Shaw Lobel, and he used to be immaculately dressed, white spats. So they called him the White Venus. There were so many people had, people, one chap there looked like a fish, he was called the fish, another chap looked like a clown, they called him Beppo. There was a number of nicknames in there. Another chap, well, very thick chested chap, they called him the Lion Tamer. Another chap that was very, very short, they called him the top half of a guardsman. There was another fellow named George Kay, a big fat chap he was, and he stood as a Labour councillor in Hampstead. Well, of course, Stock Exchange being a place of exaggeration, he wasn't a Labour candidate, he was a communist candidate. So he was known as a communist. So when there was nothing doing, it all get round him and sing the Volga Boatman to him. I say there were so many, I can't really remember a lot of them, but everybody that looked like an animal or something, got one chap with a very long nose. Van Prague was called the Anteater. And one thinking back, everybody there that had some peculiarity had a nickname.
Mm. What's the place where stories flew about? Rumours or...
Where did the story start?
No, was it a place, the Stock Exchange?
Well, it was known before the war, the place for a marketplace for dirty jokes.
Oh.
But any jokes, they're all supposed to have originated from the Stock Exchange. And you had a lot of famous athletes there. You had GTS Stevens, Captain England once, you had Severy McBride, captain of Somerset. You had H.J. Entover, played for Middlesex. At one time, Cyril Tolley was there, amateur golf champion before my time. You had people who played for the Arsenal. In every sport, they were represented. Or there was another character, De Zola. He died recently. He was a very, very ugly man. They said no woman in the same room with him was safe. And he used to come up, he used to dress very, he used to spend, a very wealthy man. He was related to the Elements by marriage. And he used to be overdressed, morning coat, waistcoat, and all that sort of stuff. And he used to travel around in the tube. He used to go hunting with the Surrey Union. And in the tube there, he was with top hat and pink hunting coat and hunting shoes. De Zola. He was quite a well-known character there.
Were there any outstanding jobbers in your experience?
Yes, there were some outstanding jobbers. I think Berger, before the war, was an outstanding jobber. He was in the Rio Tinto market. Brilliant. He was a Hungarian Jew.
What made him outstanding? What made him outstanding?
Well, he'd get up in the market and say, half bid Rio, all right, you don't want a deal, sell them at a quarter then, and things like that. He was, nobody knew, he got them all guessing, nobody knew what he was up to. And he made a lot of money, which was, of course, the outstanding thing. You had one very good job there with Lemon. I forgot his name now. He got killed in the war. He was only a young man. There have been some very good jobbers there. Very good. They had a real flair for it, better than I was. Difficult to pick them out, but they always survived and always made money consistently.
As a final question, would it be possible for you to go back now to the pre-war Stock Exchange and paint me a picture, as it were, of what it was like to stand in a particular part, perhaps by your stand, on the floor of the Stock Exchange, and describe what you saw, what you would have seen standing there what the atmosphere was like?
Well, you all stood up for a start. You're all standing around there, just like a crowd of people, almost shoulder to shoulder in the markets. And they'd all be standing there looking at, watching what they were all doing. And then you'd see a broker go in and ask somebody a price. And then he'd come out, and then you'd see somebody else. And then you might, when you saw a lot of brokers asking prices, you knew there was a lot of business. When there were no brokers, you knew there was no business. When there was one broker, someone was trying to deal there. And that was sort of all, they were all round in groups. All round in groups, West African market, the South African market, the Rhodesian market, the Australian market, the rubber market, the shipping market, the property market. It was a very small there, nothing before the war. The textile market was round there, the gilt edge market over there. And they were all, you know, just standing around there waiting for someone to speak to them. Whoever you wanted to know or wanted to deal with or wanted to get a price, just walked up and asked a price, walked away.
Was it noisy?
Sometimes, yes. Mm. Oh, and the American market was a very big market. There was always, used to wait at 3 o'clock and a lot of hollering and shouting would start. With Anaconda first, because it was a number, it began with A. That was the first one, about a minute past three, someone stopped. You knew then what the market would be like if they bid or offered Anaconda. And then they'd start off with hydros and stocks of trackie. They'd all start shouting and bawling around.
Had you been happy as a jobber?
Yes, one was happy and one had very good times and one had very trying times. It wasn't all roses all the time, far from it. You had really bad times, very depressing. You'd go there sometimes and do very little business and have a bad book which you couldn't undo. But when you were busy, you got a lot of satisfaction out of it when you, at the end of the day, when you added up your profit. But when you were doing nothing or hadn't done anything the day and all you'd done, the stock you were bull of had gone down, so you had to write them down, so you hadn't done any business and you'd lost money on paper.
Did you have any children that stayed in the city?
No, I've got two sons and a daughter, and I did. My daughter is at Institute of Medical Research. She's a biochemist, doctor of biochemistry, works there. And the two boys, one got a fitted kitchen and bathroom business that he runs himself. The other one's in sort of antiques and that sort of thing. I never entertained the idea of bringing them in the city because it's too cyclical a business. I mean, look at all these people who 2 years ago were on 100,000 a year, 50,000 a year, 75, they're all looking for a job now. Mm. Well, I think there's nothing worse in life to have a good job and then come down to nothing at all sort of thing. I mean, it's, you know, to have to reduce your standards of living, I don't think it can be very nice.
Mm. Would you have chosen a different career had you had the opportunity?
I don't think. I think I would have liked, possibly with complete hindsight, after the war, gone into property. I think you would have made more money than I've made in this business. Mm. I think that's where the big money's been made since the war, has been in property without any doubt at all. And of course, before the war, Lloyd's was looked on as a poorer brother in the city. Now I think it's the Stock Exchange, it's the poorer brother to Lloyd's. I think after the war, a young man 20, 30 years ago had been far better going into insurance than going into the Stock Exchange.
Well, I think we'll finish there.
That's right. Thank you very much. How's the time? Oh, I've got tons of time.